brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you? Welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Caroline.
And I'm Kristen.
Today is another installment of our Summer Shorts episodes. Today we're talking about bathing suits and why they are so freaking expensive.
Yeah, because speaking of shorts, I mean, guys might wear more of a board short style, but for women, the cost of a bikini, which is not very much fabric, is radically expensive.
Especially if you want to buy anything that's even slightly designer-ish or from a department store or something. Mm-hmm. And I think this is ridiculous because every year when it starts to get warm, I'm like, maybe I should get a new bathing suit, a cute, flattering, something that hides a little something-something around here. But, and then I see the prices, and I'm like, I guess I'll wait for the sale in September.
Yeah.
And buy something for next year.
Or I should just start wearing, like, a nightshirt over.
Yeah.
You know?
I'll just start wearing
a
t-shirt.
Just buy a poncho.
Yeah.
That'll work.
Exactly.
There are a few good reasons, though, why swimsuits are more expensive. And it doesn't just have to do with the fabric, which would include things like Lycra and spandex. But it has to do with the fact that the labor intensity is about the same as a shirt.
Which blows my mind, because how can two little triangles or something that looks like a tank top with underwear?
Well, it's probably all of the stitching, and maybe because of, like, if you think about a swimsuit top, if it has lining in it.
Yeah.
You know, my t-shirts aren't lined.
No, that's true.
And this is coming from an article from Daily Finance. They were talking to Marshall Cohen, who's the chief industry analyst at the NPD group that tracks retail spending. And he says that even though the labor is about the same as making a shirt, the fabric is actually not that much less, or not so much less than a typical garment, that you could get some kind of cost savings from it.
Yeah, he says it's like 1 yard as opposed to two for a shirt. So it's really not that much difference. And he says it's the lack of ability to commoditize it or use it, or use economies of scale, which basically means this is kind of a small item that is sold kind of once a year. People aren't going out in December really and buying bathing suits. So they've got to make up some of this cost. Like, you might go out and buy jeans year round.
Right.
But you're not going to go out and buy a bathing suit every month.
Yeah, that seasonality is one big reason why you have those high prices as well. But there are some designers out there who will defend the cost of not very much fabric. For instance, I mean, if you look in a nicer catalog like a J. Crew, you can easily drop $150 very quickly on a bikini. But that is nothing compared to designer Malia Mills, who was interviewed in the New York Times in May 2010, who sells designer bikinis for around $300 to $400 a piece.
That's like new tires.
But she says it's worth it. You're buying quality. She says that you are buying suits that are made in American factories, and she buys small amounts of fabric from Europe, and so that imported fabric increases the cost of swimwear, as opposed to a mass retailer like a Target or a Walmart or some other kind of super center that can buy up a ton of swimsuits and receive the benefit of the discounted cost.
And not to mention performance. Mills talks about how a bikini or a bathing suit or whatever has to perform, because you're using sunscreen, you're in chlorinated water or salt water, you know, you're running around the cabana doing who knows what in it. So it has to stand up to all of these tests.
It has to withstand cabana hijinks for an entire summer.
Exactly. Or multiple, if you're going to really invest in a good one and keep it.
Yeah. I mean, I got to say that you can probably attest to this as well. There is a difference, Caroline, between a nicer, now I've never spent $300 on a bikini, but I've definitely experienced the cheaper made, more cheaply made swimwear that all of a sudden you wear it a couple times and there's a hole, versus a nicer one that really does keep its shape and and really withstands all of those cabana hijinks.
All of those hijinks.
I don't know the last time or if I've ever been to a cabana necessarily, but.
Yeah. You don't know what happens. Anything can happen. But you mentioned Target, and in that same New York Times article, Target spokesman Joshua Thomas was quoted as saying that a company like Target with 1,740 stores in 49 states can negotiate better prices for the fabric that we use. And that's the benefit of mass production over someone like Malia Mills, who's doing something on a smaller scale, more intricate, delicate work.
But then again, just to offer one more argument, possibly in favor of those nicer suits, is that if we're talking about swimwear and the female body in particular, mm-hmm. you know, the designer Malia Mills says that, you know, if you're making something that's going to flatter your body, you want it to camouflage something, you want it to support, then you might need to go up a little bit.
Yeah.
Especially for the support issue.
They argue, advocates of nicer, you know, higher priced swimsuits might argue that once a woman puts on a really nice fitting supportive mm-hmm. swimsuit, she might be like, oh, well, this is worth it. So, I mean, I guess it just depends on what you're looking for.
Well, that's because in the words of the New York Times, this, the newer fabrics that are coming out for swimwear, and the designs that go along with it are allowed to, quote, hold the wearer in place like a girdle. they're just poolside girdles.
Sounds uncomfortable. But yeah, they talk about other things that affect the price, and that's the whole advent of mix and match swimsuits, which I think is great because somebody might be bigger on top, smaller on the bottom, or vice versa. And so you might not be as small on top and bottom, you know, so it's great to be able to mix and match, but then that leaves kind of an overabundance of maybe one size at the end of the season.
And they can charge more for this mix and match.
They can, because I never thought of this either, but if you have two separates, you're not just putting one tag and using one hanger and whatever on one swimsuit. You have to tag both of them.
God, ups the packaging, too.
More packaging.
But we mentioned $300 or $400 for a swimsuit. Since the Summer Olympics are happening in London very soon, we should probably mention, too, the even though they won't be wearing designer bikinis, of course, but the Team USA will be wearing some very pricey and specially designed suits. In the previous Summer Olympics, they wore a $600 Speedo laser racer suit, which has since been banned because it was just too darn fast.
Yeah, it was breaking all sorts of records.
But they went back to the drawing boards, and for the 2012 Olympics, again, it's sponsored by Speedo. It's called Fast Skin 3, and it's going to cost around $500 a pop. And it costs so much, not just because of the fabric, but also the way that they make it. In order to make the body as aerodynamic as possible, I guess, or hydrodynamic as possible, the material is made with higher thread counts in specific places, I guess, to keep the water, like, wicking past you at optimal speeds.
Interesting.
But it's zipper-free. There are no zippers on the U.S. Olympic swimwear.
Yeah, that would totally slow you down.
No, well, they're against regulation, which doesn't make sense because, yeah, it does seem like if you had a zipper, then you'd just be hurting yourself, but I don't know.
Okay, well, coming way down from a $500 or $600 Olympic swimsuit, for the year ending March 31st, 2011, the average price for a two-piece swimsuit was $22.55, which goes against everything we were just saying.
Yeah, we were just asking why they're so expensive, but they seem so expensive. Is it just the ones that we see?
I think they seem so expensive because I read too many women's magazines. In reality, Walmart holds 25% of the market, and other discount retailers like Target, TJ Maxx, Marshalls account for an additional 20 to 30% in sales, so that makes sense. There are a lot of nice swimsuits that you and I might be perusing in catalogs or online that seem really expensive, but maybe we're just not going to Walmart. And that's where a lot of people are buying their swimsuits.
Yeah, there were retail analysts explaining how there is a definite trickle-down effect of swimwear because it is seasonal, and retailers aren't going to sell out their entire stock, especially if it's regularly marked. Everybody knows that once the cold temperatures roll around, the swimsuit prices are going to fall, and then you start this snowball of them getting marked down more and more and more, even switching hands.
Exactly.
Back to the manufacturer, then back to a discounted retailer, then back to a manufacturer, and back.
Yeah, the manufacturer has to eat the cost of shipping every time. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and then it eventually ends up in like some little Cabana Beach store in Bali somewhere. And when you're on some ritzy vacation, you're like, oh, look, a $2 swimsuit. How adorable.
We're back to our hijinks around the cabana. That's when you can go buy a discounted suit. And just for an idea of how all of this pricey or discounted swimwear adds up, the market is valued at around $17.6 billion projected for 2015, because the market is actually on its way up because of, and this is from global industry analysts who say that there's a growing interest in body care, social mobility, relaxed dress codes, improved performance of textiles, and the escalation of beauty and spa industry. And along with that, it's not just women who are apparently becoming more conscious of how they look in a swimsuit and the kinds of swimsuit variety that they have. And apparently, and I have seen this, it says relaxed dress codes. Mm-hmm. I have seen trend, like fashion trend reports talking about wearing, integrating swimwear into your fashionable summer get-ups. And even afterwards, if you have a one-piece tank of, mm-hmm. you know, wearing that under some gaucho pants, I don't know. Never take fashion advice from me. I'm just saying that I've seen it.
Okay. Well, we mentioned earlier that, you know, bathing suits aren't really a year-round item. But there is this whole cruise line that some designers have, like cruise period of the year, where it might still be chilly up in Connecticut or something. But if you're taking a cruise in the Caribbean, it's pretty warm and you need your cruise wear bikini.
It's also what I wear at home, just cruise wear.
I picture lots of flowing linen.
Yeah. All sarongs all the time. But before we wrap up this episode, since we're talking about swimwear and price, would you care to inform our dear listeners out there about the world's most expensive bikini?
Do it. It's sparkly.
It is sparkly. It costs $30 million. Just $30 million.
Just $30 million?
It was featured, not so surprisingly, in the Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Centerfold of 2006. Molly Sims was wearing it, and by it, I mean 150 carats. Of D flawless diamonds, plus a 51-carat flawless pear-shaped diamond. And yes, the pear-shaped diamond that was on the bottom,
mm-hmm.
covering her vulva. And I just giggled at that, vulva. And yeah, essentially it was a bunch of diamonds covering her nipples, not much more, and her vulva, not much more. And $30 million, hey.
That probably wouldn't do well going back to the manufacturer and back to a discount retailer and then back to the manufacturer and then to some small shop in Bali.
Down at Walmart. Now, Molly Sims did say that when they brought out the bikini for her to put on, she broke out in hot sweats.
Shoot, I would too, being around all those diamonds.
All that glitter and glitz.
Yeah. I bet they would scratch. I'm just saying.
So there you have it. The reason why swimsuits are typically so expensive is because they're labor intensive and they're seasonal, and you have body specific tailoring that might force you to want to mix and match.
Mm-hmm.
All that additional labels.
So I think it's like any other good piece of clothing, really. I mean, if you want to invest in something that's going to last and hold up to multiple summers of use, then sure, maybe spend a little bit more. But if you don't go swimming that often, if you're not really a beach person, I think you'd be fine going to a discount retailer.
Yeah.
I would have to say.
Do what's best for you and your body.
We don't want to pressure you.
No.
That's not what we're here for.
So that's all we have today for our summer short, except for a little bit of listener mail.
This email is from Allison about our stay-at-home versus working moms episode. She said that I wanted to weigh in on the working moms episode with my own experiences as the daughter of a stay-at-home mom. One thing that irritates me about this quote-unquote debate is the overwhelming focus on moms' immediate happiness while their kids are still kids, without real consideration for the second half of their adult lives once the urchins have grown up and flown the coop. My mom loved being at home with my sister and me while we were young, and I think it was an awesome decision for her personally. We were lucky enough to be able to live on my dad's income, and she relished intensive parenting in the hippie mother kind of way. However, now that my sister and I have grown up, I see mom having a much more difficult time than my friends' working parents transitioning back to a life that doesn't revolve around children. Breaking into the workplace is proving super difficult since she's older and unwilling to take miserable jobs, and I get the sense that she's struggling without a satisfying intellectual pursuit to throw her efforts behind. It takes time to build careers. I think moms need to weigh the fact that once they jump off that train, they may not be able to catch it again. As much as we love our babies, life doesn't end at 50. Sometimes I wonder if there could have been a happy medium and if she might have benefited from working a part-time job once my sister and I got older, allowing some professional development before we left the house altogether. Of course, what I would have preferred as a kid would have been both of my parents working part-time, especially as a teenager, got too much time with mom and not enough with dad. Thanks, Allison.
Yes, and thanks to everyone who has weighed in on that episode about whether working mothers are happier. We've gotten a lot of great feedback. And, of course, if you want to share your thoughts about any of our episodes, today's or otherwise, you can email us. momstuff@discovery.com is our email address. And you can also find us on Facebook. Leave us a comment there. Like us. Follow us on Twitter at @momstuffpodcast. And if you'd like to learn more about how to have some summer fun, you should head over to our website. It's howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?